is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness.
Boils and ghouls, lock your doors and strap yourselves in. From Los Angeles, California, Bloody Disgusting presents the Boo Crew Podcast. Horror news, commentary, reviews, interviews, and more. With your hosts, Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio.
Hey, I'm Leo.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Trevor, and we're the Boo Crew. Happy New Year and welcome to episode 94.
You are hanging out with singer and lyricist Courtney LaPlante and multi-instrumentalist Mike Stringer of the incredible new band Spirit Box.
Ever since we were exposed to their insanely creepy and unnerving video for their track Belcara, we've become obsessed. Definitely look it up. It turned all the power off in the studio here like two times. Very creepy. Learn about their fresh approach to melting your brain through cinema, including the secrets of some of their videos like that one.
Spirit Box makes music that is so unique and drenched in the influence not only of genre films sonically and visually, but in the paranormal as well. Using actual EVP recordings laced through their music. We'll talk to them all about that. Learn about their obsession with true crime, favorite horror movies, startling first-hand ghost stories, chocolate, cheesies, and burritos.
At time of release, their new single, Rule of Nines, is out now. They'll be playing a live show in Victoria, BC, Canada, February 22nd, to kick off their European tour, supporting After the Burial with Make Them Suffer and Polar. Tickets are on sale now. Grab a coffee crisp and enjoy episode 94.
This is Courtney.
And this is Mike.
From Spirit Box, you are being possessed by another demonic episode of
The Boo Crew.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Go ahead, scream. That's all we need.
Another victim crawls onto the gurney for a Boo Crew autopsy.
Joining the Boo Crew in the Speakeasy studio is one of the most exciting bands out there. Emerging from the ashes of their previous group, the insanely cool and irreverent comic book gross-out horror metal project I Wrestled a Bear Once, this new creative movement was announced in 2017, along with a debut EP released through Palecord. Cloaked in a veil of eerie mystique, they immediately connected with listeners who discovered them on their own, like that secret passageway in a haunted house. Compelled by artful and touching lyrics, disarmed by music that sounded like a nightmare, they laced the songs with actual EVP recordings. Soaring melodies that serve only to weaponize the attack of the singer's screams. Their singles collections, available everywhere now. We are honored to welcome vocalist and lyricist Courtney LaPlante and guitarist Mike Stringer of Spirit Box.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you guys for being here and for being up in Canada. What brings you guys to LA?
We've been recording a couple songs.
Nice.
Yeah. We're doing two singles. We've been recording them at the Hallway Studios in Woodland Hills, and this has worked out perfectly to, you know, stop
by.
That's so, we're
and,
so stoked.
This is a great ending to our trip. We're leaving tomorrow. I still have more stuff to record today, so I'm really trying not to freak out right now. I need to finish, but I was like, it's perfect because I need to warm my voice up. So this is awesome. I'll be nice and warmed up and ready to go by the time we go back to the studio. And until then, you're going to hear a really nice, groggy, smoky voice. But yeah, this is a great ending to the trip.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Well, we're honored to be a part of it.
Yeah. You guys are really gassing us up with that intro.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good.
Great.
Every word of it's true.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. I know this is random, but I love Canadian candy. Do you guys have a favorite Canadian thing that you love that's exclusive to Canada? It's like, I love Coffee Crisp. Mm-hmm. That's like my favorite.
Yeah, I've been
Smarties.
Showing her Canadian confections.
First of all, we're horrible people for not bringing you guys.
Yeah, we definitely should have.
It's
for sure.
Okay.
Arrow bars, please.
Yeah, next time.
It's funny that you mentioned that because, you know, as we were talking before, Courtney's lived in Canada for a very long time. And it wasn't up until about, I don't know, would you say 6 months ago or something? You had never had a bag of cheesies before?
Yeah, I've been there for 15 years.
Wow. And so I brought some home one time and she looks at them and she's like, why did you buy those?
I thought they were discount Cheetos.
She thought that they were
knockoff, like dollar store.
You know, the Hawkins cheesy.
Yeah. She thought that they were like Walmart cheesies basically or whatever. And I was like, it's because, what do you mean, why did I bring them home? They're literally the best things in the world. And he was like, and she goes, let me see, takes one bite of it and like just loses her mind, because honestly, cheesies are like the best.
Lauren, you haven't even tried cheesies.
Like, oh my god, what is this? Once again, I didn't even think about it because I just assumed that, oh, he's from Vancouver, this won't impress him, but the rest of you would have liked it. Next time we'll bring you
next
cheese.
Time
you'll see.
Yay. We'll send you a care package.
Oh, I'm into that stuff. Like, there's even a subscription service, I forget, it's called like expats or something. It's some delivery service where Americans can get Canadian chips and candy delivered to their door.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Why, and you get like a care box. I saw it like some of those things that comes on Facebook, targeted ads.
We'll smuggle some stuff in next time.
Yeah but cheesies, how would you describe them? They're kind of like Cheetos, but they're like
compressed, they're more like corn based.
Yeah, they're made out of corn.
Is that the difference?
Yeah, that's the difference. And it makes a world of difference, to be honest with you.
Oh man, it's we love them.
I kind of regret introducing them to her because they come in a massive bag
and
they're always on sale. And I'll bring a bag home, and within like one night, we'll just sit there watching like Hell's Kitchen and it'll just be gone.
Oh my gosh. Wait, your dad's coming this week.
Yeah, he's coming from Canada.
Yeah, come on.
Load up.
He's coming from Saskatchewan.
It's time to
texting him a list.
But yeah, I love Coffee Crisp too.
Oh, they're so good.
And I really just like all the, it's the more so the easy access to nice Cadbury chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That
you
too.
Know, where in the States where it's more Hershey's.
Yes.
Centric. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Which is not as good. I'm not going to lie. It's not as good.
I'll tell you though, when I was growing up as a kid in Canada, in the comic books I would read, there would always be ads for Hershey chocolate bars. I couldn't find them anywhere in Canada. And so Hershey's was like a big deal for me.
Know. Were you disappointed when you had
No, I like a Hershey bar.
I like myself a Hershey bar.
So like when... Okay, so when it's Halloween, do they have like mini coffee crisp that you
can... Yes, I was just going to say those are all, I would consider those all the Halloween candies. So get your dad to bring you the pack.
Yeah, the big box.
The fun size.
Yeah.
And Smarties. You love the Smarties.
Oh, I love the Smarties.
Which are different here. Smarties, are state like Smarties.
Powdered, sugary.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're rockets. Candy. What you call in Canada is rockets.
I was so confused. We had like this whole confusing conversation because he was talking about Smarties. I was like, oh, I'll get them. And I'm like, here's Smarties. He's like, what the hell's that? I was like, Smarties. And then he's like, no, they're chocolate.
You can get a Smarties McFlurry.
Yeah, you can.
I totally forgot.
I'm just like toying with my emotions right now.
You know, they have like a seasonal thing. Right now, they have a Nanaimo bar McFlurry.
Yeah. Whoa. I don't even know if you know what a Nanaimo bar is.
I have no idea what that is.
It's like a brownie with mint in it, maybe?
It's like a coconut base.
Coconut then, chocolate square.
Yeah, yeah.
But with a cream filling.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You'll see. Well,
it's like creme de menthe.
It's really, really
very high end.
And like named Nanaimo Bar because I would assume its origins are in Nanaimo, BC.
No, allegedly.
That's what. But see, that's the thing. It's a common misconception. Everybody thinks that that's the case, but
we haven't looked into the Nanaimo Bar lore.
It seems to be a really hot topic.
Wow. So,
yeah,
it is. But we like coming here because I think it's maybe. If you ever talk to any other broke musician people who tour a lot, not fancy ones that like fly everywhere and have fancy food all the time, but ones like us that live in vans, we are obsessed with American food chains.
Yes.
Obsessed.
Okay, like what? Let's talk about it.
Just stuff that you would never want to go to. Like we always have a game plan. I'm like, all right. First of all, we need Chipotle for lunch.
I love Chipotle.
Then we need to go. I need at least one Cheesecake Factory on this tour.
I love Cheesecake Factory. Yeah.
That place is insane. It's got something for everyone.
Back of my mind right now, I'm like, all right, Michael, we have two meals left here. One of them has to be a nice thing because we're going to go out with like our producer tonight and say goodbye to everyone. We have to go to a nice dinner. But until then, nothing will stand between me and Veggie Grill. I need the buffalo, the fake chicken buffalo.
You know what? They just opened one down the street.
Well, there you go. It's meant to be.
Brand new.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And I don't even know if it... I haven't eaten there in forever. I don't even remember if it's that good. I just really want it. I remember... I just like that
it's
I can
It's more so
have
the idea.
Right, you can have it.
Buffalo
It's
style
really good. It thing. Is really good.
So and we let, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah. Yep, oh we got God. One of those.
Yeah.
Last night, though, we went to Salsa and Beer.
I haven't been there.
I've been there, yeah. It's good.
It's just like the food...
There's just too much of it.
I couldn't, like, I was trying to take a picture of my food and I couldn't do it.
You couldn't pull back enough?
No, I had to have my phone up here.
Yeah. They had to do like a panoramic.
And I ate so much, but then I looked down at my plate and the server probably thought I didn't like my food because it looked like I didn't even touch my food.
Oh, one of those places.
Wow. Yeah.
What about In-N-Out?
Oh yeah. I've eaten it twice since
then. Animal style. I like the animal fries.
Yeah.
You have to.
And every time I eat it, I'm like, it's not even as good as I remember, but I don't care. It's just, I can't have it at home. So
El Pollo Loco? Did you do El Pollo?
No, I haven't.
No, we haven't done that. No.
I mean, Taco Bell is a novelty for us. We don't have one where we live.
Oh, wow. Really?
Taco Bells are scarce up there. Whenever I found them, they were paired up with KFCs.
Yeah. And I feel like it wasn't a full menu.
Really? Yeah, no, it's like a
quarter menu.
Yeah, an express version of Taco Bell.
It's an abomination.
Taco Bell is apparently the most healthiest of the fast foods.
That's what I've heard.
Really?
That's what I tell myself. Because I eat on tour all the time.
You gotta justify it.
I like the way you think.
It's a good, convenient, like, vegetarian. Any Mexican place is a nice vegetarian. Yeah,
add bean.
Yeah. Just add bean.
Yeah.
I love that we spent like a good 10 minutes talking about candy. I love it.
The more this comes now, you know, we used to always be around other touring musicians.
Yeah.
This is just part of what we always, oh no, you make sure like, oh, we have, okay, we're going to Newark tomorrow. So, you know, you make sure you get off on that exit. Cause there's that Flying J gas station that has the Taco Bell in it. And if you don't go to Wawa and get the Wawa or Taco Bell, then you're stuck for 20 miles. You're only going to get McDonald's.
That's awesome. I love the tour logic.
And
right?
So now we don't do that as often anymore. And so we're just like waxing about it to our family.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we'll go visit my dad in the States. And we're like, all right, Dad, all right, we got to go to Panera Bread. And he's just, he's like, we don't really have to do that.
Let's not do that.
Let's not go there.
How about Cracker Barrel? That's always like an oasis on a tour, I imagine.
The best.
When we got married a couple of years ago and we had, this sounds very excessive, but we had like a Canadian wedding and then an American wedding. Because I have some elderly grandparents that couldn't come to our wedding in Canada. So we did like two weddings a week after one another. And we took Michael's British parents to Cracker Barrel for the first time.
Yeah.
And they lost their mind. Still talk about it. Like, we need to go back to the Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
Can we go to that place, the Cracker Barrel?
Yeah.
And then,
what did they like so much about it?
I don't know.
Well,
at first they were just
confused.
They didn't understand.
Right. I mean, like, who walks into a restaurant and the first thing is a gift shop?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that piqued their interest.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I guess they just really hadn't, you know, gone into the world of Southern food yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So then, I mean, that being your first taste of it, I guess, yeah.
The biscuits.
You'd be pretty blown away.
I've never been there.
Yeah, you've never been. It's so good.
It is very good.
Oh, you gotta go.
You gotta go.
Yeah.
Are they better than Lucille's biscuits? Because no.
I haven't eaten them since I've had Lucille's biscuits, honestly.
No, I'm sure Cracker Barrel's trash. It's the novelty, though, of us not getting to go.
Yeah, it's all about the novelty.
We went, his parents came with us to Alabama one time to visit my family there. And then the day before we left, we were like, let's take them to the Waffle House. And they were just having a great time. And then that day we went to the Waffle House and Michael's dad, he got his food and then he ate it. And he was so into it. He looked at us. He's like, this place has been here the whole time we've been here and you've never taken me to the Waffle House. And then we were leaving the next day and he was trying to coordinate. Like, all right, but if we leave at 7, we can go to the Waffle House before the flight. And we're like, Barry,
that's not happening.
Yeah, so he's hooked. We got to bring it. We got to get him back.
Like
the Waffle House here?
Because we have a Waffle House, but I'm sure
he went to the one in Alabama.
In Alabama.
Oh, so okay. It's probably different.
It was greasy and just,
yeah, and it's funny too because he looks down on Denny's, but it's the same.
He's probably gonna listen to this, Barry. We're calling you out. You look down on Denny's.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing.
It's a call out at me, Barry.
There was one more thing I wanted to mention. It was about candy. Oh. Remember I told you, like, when Lauren didn't know what Smarties were, like, what Canadian Smarties were, I said, you don't know, like, there's a Smarties song. And she's like, what?
Do you remember
the Smarties song. I'll start singing it. You probably remember it. When you eat your Smarties, do you eat the red ones last? You crush them very slowly. You suck them very fast.
You know what?
Right? Yeah. You remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
When, now my age when they had their song, it was kind of in the 90s, late 90s, like new metal guy, like industrial music revival time. So when I was a kid, they had the song for the powdery, sugary candy Smarties from America too, but it was like an industrial song. If you look up the commercial, it's type in like 90s Smarties commercial, it's like, when you eat your Smarties, do you eat your red ones last? And that's all it said.
Really?
Yeah.
What? Wow.
That's so funny. They're just trying to go with the trend there.
Right.
Look it up later. Just type in like 90s Smarties commercial. Yeah. Oh, it was really metal.
Yeah, it's when Korn was in their heyday. And yeah.
Right.
Nice. Now I could talk about like food forever, but okay. All right, so your guys' music and visuals definitely have inherently creepy and unsettling vibes. Let's talk about that horror influence, beginning with your first experience you remember having being exposed to the horror genre.
The first experience.
Could be a film, it could be a book, a TV show.
You know what? I think it's one of those, I never think about it like this, but you know when you're a really little kid and you start watching something that like a grown up may find disturbing within their context, but as a kid you don't find it that way. I think it would have to be A Nightmare Before Christmas, because I literally watched it every single day for probably 3 years. Me and my little brothers would put that on and we'd act out all the parts every single, you know, kids watch the same thing over and over, but you don't think about it as being disturbing till you're older.
Sure.
So, you know, or at least I didn't have the context for that. And so but that would be it. It's just really, really dark and disturbing. But then, you know, do you like that? Obviously you like that movie.
Yeah.
You know, the monsters in the beginning, what do they say? Yeah. They say, that's our job, but we're not mean.
Yeah.
In this town of Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think mine would definitely have to be Nightmare Before Christmas as well. Just as a youngin. But I think my first real exposure to, you know, the horror genre, as like light as it was probably Sleepy Hollow. That was like the first one that I was really hooked on. And then after that, I don't know if it came after or not. I could be wrong. And maybe this one was the first one. I was at my friend's house sleeping over, and all of the kids started watching 13 Ghosts.
Mm. Ooh.
And
like the remake with Matthew Lillard.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It was.
The color
expert,
yeah.
Yeah. And that was, I was terrified for sure. That was the first one that I remember actually being really disturbed about. Like I couldn't watch it really.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't remember how old I was, but I would say one of those was definitely the first one.
And then actually being really, well, me and my little brother are always really scared when the guy says, I am the one hiding under your bed.
Right.
We didn't like that guy.
Yeah.
But I think the first time I was really actually disturbed from an actual horror movie. The rest is just, you know, I'd see my parents watching like a violent movie and that would disturb me when I would be like walking by. Mm-hmm. But I think the first movie that really disturbed me, my mom let me watch The Exorcist because it's a really good movie. And that was our thing. We'd go to Movie Gallery or Blockbuster every Friday night and we'd rent. There was like a dollar for each movie when we'd rent like 8 movies. And she would kind of like chaperone me, you know, she'd be like, all right, you can close your eyes if you want, like there's about to be like some boobs and it's a sex scene, you know, she'd like give me a heads up or like, all right, this person's gonna die, like so I could choose to not watch, or we could like talk it out, because she loved movies and she wanted me to be exposed to cool movies. And so I watched The Exorcist because my dad watched it when he was a little kid by himself in a basement.
Oh,
basement. Wow.
When he was a little kid. So I was like, well, I want to watch it. So I think when I was like 13, I watched The Exorcist with my mom. I had to turn it off at night and watch it again in the daytime because I was so disturbed from that movie.
What was it that disturbed you about the movie?
All of the weird imagery of all like the weird sounds. There's like buzzing bees the whole time in the background. There's just really weird sonically. There's a lot of weird stuff happening in that movie, like a lot of weird tension. Obviously I was really scared of like the little girl getting possessed, but all the tension at the beginning when there's nothing jumping out at you yet, you know, just like them sitting in for her to get a CAT scan and like that. It's like all the scenes are so tense because I know something scary is going to happen. We've all seen the girl walking, you know, in a, doing a bridge and walking down the stairs. Yeah. But before all that, I was like, the whole time I was like waiting for the clues of stuff happening. And so I go so on edge, like the whole time. I think I was more scared of like the first half of the movie than I was the second half of the movie because it was so tense. There's no release yet of like a jump scare.
Yeah, they did a really good job of that in that movie for sure.
That one and The Ring, I've never to this day looked when at the end when the girl comes out of the TV and it shows her face. I can't look. Yeah. I just can't look at it. I tried. I think one time you like freeze framed it for me. So I was like,
there she is.
I can't do it.
I think even looking back at it too, it wasn't even more so like the horror stuff that got me. It was more so the paranormal stuff that got me when I was younger. Probably Mothman was one that got me for sure. And watching a lot of ghost shows for sure when I was younger as well.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience?
I have, yeah. When I was really young.
What happened?
We lived in this old house and my room was to the right of my parents' room. And it was at the end of this long hallway. I always remember when I was younger, like, you know, hearing my name when no one was there and stuff like that, just random whispers and stuff.
But you said you weren't really scared yet because you're a kid. You don't have context yet of why that might be weird.
Yeah. You know? It's just kind of, it wasn't something that was like threatening me or anything like that. It was just something weird like that. But I still remember to this day. Yeah. Like I woke up one night and I was terrified and I open up my door and I walk across the hallway. And when you go to open up my parents' room in that house, there's a long hallway before their room even starts. And it was pitch black. And I open up the door and I just see this shadow figure standing and looking directly at the wall to my left, just facing it, basically like an inch away from the wall. And it kind of looked like my dad, my dad has a, you can tell it's my dad by the way that, yeah. And, he was staring at the wall and I remember distinctly saying like, "Dad, is that you?" And I was shaking because I had a nightmare or something like that. And I remember this figure turning to me and walking towards me and then disappearing.
And it wasn't your dad.
And it wasn't my dad. And I distinctly remember, you know, why is my dad standing in the hallway just staring at the wall? You know what I mean? It's like 1 a.m. or something. So that was the biggest one that I've ever had.
And honestly,
I still remember it.
When he first told me about that, like this was probably like 8 years ago. He told me, you know, back when you would first tell me about this, like I watched you, like you were disturbed reliving it and telling it to
I remember
me.
Every moment of it.
Yeah, he still remembers it.
Yeah.
Was that the only time that happened?
Only time.
But he said, you know, the typical thing you always hear in movies and stuff where you walk out and your mom's like, "Why did you throw your stuff all over your room?" And you come back and your clothes are, you know, like little things that a kid doesn't understand how to say, "I didn't do that." Yeah. Kids always say that. I didn't do it. You know, so
it was a weird house from the outside. It just looked really small, but it was massive. It was probably over 2000, like 2,400 square feet.
Huh.
Wow.
But it just looked like a tiny, small home. And then, you know, the basement was just, you could rent out three parts of it. You know what I mean? It was just massive and a lot of unusable space. And it's just odd.
I always wonder if your parents got real weird vibes about that too, because they kind of like, it was a great house. And they always talk about, "Man, I wish we had kept that house."
Yeah.
It's right down the road from where they live now, but they got out of there. Like they wanted to, I always wonder, I think last time I talked to them about it, they're like, "No, it was fine."
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because we left that house to move into a much older home where unfortunately the people who owned it had passed in the house. So in my mind, I was like, "Oh, great. Like part two."
Yeah, exactly. You know, like,
but no, nothing.
Yeah. Huh.
They gutted the whole thing and made it all new and everything. And yeah, but nothing. But
Did you ever go back and research that other house, that first house, to see if anything had happened there in the past or anything like that?
Not really. When I was younger, I remember, do you remember ever going on a website called the Shadowlands?
No.
There was this website called the Shadowlands, and it was back when like websites were very like DIY.
Sure.
Like they all had the same text and like bright colors and stuff, and these broken links and everything. And this guy just had this forum of just people coming together and talking about experiences, sharing photos, EVPs, just videos back before YouTube, where it was just a QuickTime link and it would have to load and you'd sit there. And I remember being so young, looking at this stuff, like 9, 10 years old. And I was obsessed with, you know, just all that stuff because it's just so interesting to me, whether you believe it or not, you know what I mean? It's just very fascinating. And I remember researching and people saying like, "Well, you know, if your house is it's near a cemetery or if there's a lot of fields, there could be some energy or, you know, something there that could cause a haunting or demon or something. And I remember asking my mom, like, do you know if this house was built on fields or anything? And I never really got a straight answer, but yeah, I remember being much younger and trying to figure that out. Because, you know, at least then it would have made sense. I could have put two and two together. But to this day, I have no idea.
And you never know. It could have been a scary dream.
Yeah, it very well could have been. I don't know. But I feel like to this day, I'm 28 now, and I still remember each moment of it. And it was the most real thing possible.
Yeah. Everything that's ever happened to me, it's so weird because I'm so interested in paranormal stuff. But I always rationalize whatever weird thing that's happened to me away, and I think it, you know, it's like a coping mechanism. You're like, that didn't really happen.
Yeah,
like anything that's ever happened to me that I just felt like a strange presence. Have you ever had that happen? And it's especially if you're kind of half asleep, it's like your body's almost protecting you. They're like, just go back to sleep.
Yeah,
there's not someone in your room trying, you know, haunting you. You're just like, go back to sleep, and you kind of just listen to your brain. You're like, all right,
yeah,
I'm going back to sleep. So I've always been like that. I was in like, nah, it's, you know, I was just really stressed out that night. I probably had a bad dream, but I had a weird thing on the Queen Mary in Long Beach.
Oh, really?
We played a show on the Queen Mary.
No way.
Yeah,
and I still rationalize it away. But yeah, I was just like joking around. We found, you know, our it was funny because our green rooms for the show were just the hotel rooms. So they, you know, our green rooms were all just like the suites in the hotel and on the boat. And so after our show, we were just all hanging out and having fun, hanging out with, you know, other bands that played the festival on it. And it was super fun. And then we jokingly were, you know, we found the unmarked door. That's like the most haunted room in the place. And we were just all drinking and having fun. And I went up to the door and was like, oh, is anyone, you know, we were all like, hey, you want a beer? Ghosts, do you want a beer? Like, we were just like, you guys want to smoke a joint?
Yeah.
Like, ghosts drink wine, by the way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're civilized. Come on.
A Chardonnay, honey.
Yeah.
And someone of the guys was like, hey, I hear like a faucet in there. And I put my head against the door and I'm sorry to get so dark, but it was like, there's a little finger just all scratching in my head, like as like a fingernail, like scratching into my head. And all of a sudden it was like, I imagine it must be like with someone who's going through like a manic depressive phase. I wasn't crazy to anybody, but I just like I just had to walk away. And all I could really think was like, don't talk to me. I will strangle you if you talk to me. And I honestly, like in my head, it was like, jump off the side of the boat. It was like someone was telling me, like, go jump off the side of the boat.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
And it was like, and it made sense. I was like, yeah, I got to jump off the side of the boat. And it was really weird because Michael could just tell that I was really upset.
Yeah.
And then it was, so he grabbed me. He's like, hey, the farther away we keep going down the corridors, the farther away we go, the better you're going to feel. And it was like, the farther away I got, the better I felt. It was like lifted off. But it was weird. And I rationalize it like. You know, I was just really worked up because I was scared. It was a scary place, right? And I probably just was maybe really going through a depression or something. And then, I don't know, what did I do for the rest of the night? I went into the hotel room, I just laid down.
It took you a little while to kind of come back. Yeah, for sure.
I felt like I got electrocuted. Like,
yeah.
My eyes got all swollen and my ears got all swollen. And it was like I was having an allergic reaction, kind of.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was interesting too, because the whole time people were saying, oh, there's one room on here that's really bad. And we were walking around drinking and there was still ghost tours happening. And so we kind of were down the hall and you can hear in the distance, like the guy, like, and now this is room 132. This is whatever, boarded up, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, there it is. And as soon as they left, we walked over and, you know, we're kind of like putting our ears up against it and just seeing if there's anything there. And yeah. So had we not have like come across that, we wouldn't have even known, you know what I mean? So,
and I think now you can actually stay in that room, right, Leo? They have, yes. Yeah, you
wow.
stay, yeah, they yeah. redid the inside. And
oh yeah,
have
when we went there,
there
was, you couldn't, there wasn't, they yeah. had ripped everything
right.
out.
Yeah, I think it's just recently that they opened that room, and it's like, I think it's an elevated experience, like an extra experience, right? You can stay in the haunted room. It's booked for years, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Why is it, like, that ship is like the most haunted ship in the world. So Leo, do you remember why it was haunted?
The ship during World War II was used to transport troops, I guess, back mm-hmm. and forth from the UK, you know, to the mainland. I don't know if they were transporting troops that were fatally ill or might have died on the way back home, or mm-hmm. I'm not sure the
there's
entire history
a lot
of that.
Death,
you know,
on it.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like, yeah, there's a lot of death there. And then, of course, there have been some tragic accidents there, you know, itself. Of course, that room, they say it's haunted, the swimming pool. And the doors, was it to the engine room or something? That's another location. They say that somebody got trapped there and was crushed to death or something.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I remember reading that. Well, it was interesting, too, because recently we went to Zat Bagans' Haunted Museum in Vegas.
Oh, we want to go there so bad. Well, we want to.
My birthday.
It was incredible. It was incredible.
This was recently?
Yeah, in
February. This was last February.
Okay.
We went. There's an exhibit, a Queen Mary exhibit, and they have the haunted mirror there where the captain of the ship allegedly like looked into the mirror as it was pretty wild.
And he like, I don't know. I don't remember. There was so much stuff in there. I was so overwhelmed that I didn't absorb everything they said, but they had some creepy stuff in there.
Yeah, that's the thing. That,
it was
that,
really
that
cool.
House is massive and each room is a different exhibit. And I don't know how many exhibits did we go through? Like 50, 60?
Yeah, it was like we were in there for at least 2 hours and it was really, it's really cool. It's like a whole interactive experience. You go from room to room and a new host greets you and it's like, come in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really,
it's phenomenal.
It's so morbid. It's so depressing and morbid. And anyway, I even got to see
the Dybbuk box.
Yeah.
The Dybbuk box.
Michael didn't go in. He just
That was one of them that I opted out for.
Like, really? Yeah. That's an insane story. It was a Post Malone who ended up opening it with Zat Bagans or touching it or something. And then
he got into a bunch of
this
horrible
crazy shit happened.
Yeah. I was like, it's not worth it.
I went in and looked at it. But ever since that Queen Mary thing, I always was timid and I always thought I was being respectful around that stuff because I'm not super convinced even after all that weird stuff, but I still like don't, I want to be respectful. And so I went in, but I'm like, I don't want to really like look around or touch anything. I just went in there.
Is it under glass or something? What is
and
it?
There's like a rim of salt,
around it.
And they have prayers going 24/7.
Your speakers.
Whoa. Wow. Did you guys go in and sign the forms to see was it the staircase from the demon house?
Yeah, that's the last
that
part
creepy.
Of it.
Oh. It's the big grand finale. It's really creepy.
They really rile you up for it too. It's like, you don't have to be in here if you don't want to. Like,
people
get sick. And then even the person showing you the room was just like, I don't want to be in here for too long. So everybody's set. I'm gonna press a button. I'm going to leave. And so they press a button and this thing's like, and then it's just there. And you can only see a certain, like, you have to go really close to kind of check it out.
Of course you do.
Yeah, of course.
We're obsessed with ghost adventure.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have seen the documentary, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Demon House?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very creepy.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's one of those things where I went into it expecting Zach to kind of be a specific way that we kind of know him
for.
I was expecting
a little bit more of of campiness.
Yeah,
that's why
sure.
I love ghost adventures.
Yeah.
But it was dark.
And I really, really appreciated that. I really liked that. Honestly.
I'm surprised you made it through the warning at the beginning. I still can't make it through the warning at the beginning.
I've seen it. They have not.
Yeah.
Because of the warning at the beginning.
What'd you think of it? It could follow you.
I love it because this is a recent case.
Yes.
This happened, what, like 5-6 years ago at the Tops? I mean,
and it's very compelling the way that they document everything.
Yeah, and it happened in Gary, Indiana, and there is at least a police officer, a doctor, two social workers.
Yeah, the social worker.
Who were witnesses to this boy walking up this, you know, the wall backwards.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
And you could feel their kind of embarrassment of having to admit, you know how, like I was just talking about like the scary ghost thing. Like I felt really embarrassed saying that, you know, it's like people, they don't have a horse in the race. They're not, they're not trying to get attention.
Right.
They're kind of sheepish about it.
The really interesting part of that documentary, too, is when the person's driving by that just happened to live in that place.
Right.
And then they kind of get talking and then they walk through it together. And, you know, she starts acting very, very weird.
Yep.
Because Zach's asking her, being like, which room did you stay in? You know, she's like, oh, this was my room. And like her kids are there now, like walking around, checking it out, like not really knowing what's happening. And, you know, she just starts acting very strange, like basically like, I need to leave.
Yeah. And then after her teenage daughter tried to kill herself, she was like
crazy
overcome with that. So it's really bizarre. And it's, I don't know, but I did find, do you like Ghost Adventures, the show Ghost Adventures?
I'm scared of it, man.
Really? No. I love Ghost Adventures. My favorite.
It's one of our guilty pleasure shows for sure. Because it's
every night.
I'm kind of 50-50 on it because sometimes you watch it and you're just like, come on.
Right.
Really? Like, why are you yelling and everything? But then sometimes they present some stuff that's actually incredible.
Yeah.
You know? So I kind of like that, though, the dynamic of like, this is kind of hilarious to like, wow, that's terrifying.
I guess you need that balance, right? If it was all just terrifying, it'd be just, oh my God.
We're obsessed with Zach Bagans.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Me meeting Zach Bagans would be like if Beyonce walked in here. Like, if Zach Bagans came in, I would just be like, oh my God, it's here.
Well,
he is.
We went to the museum, and the whole time, you know, everybody goes in there, they're always like, where's Zach? Where's Zach? You know, the guy up front's like, well, he might be in today. I don't know. Because apparently he goes there like every day. And we went through it, and then the next day we were on Instagram or something, and someone I guess Zach posted saying like, oh, today was our what,
like it was like the 100,000th
visitor person. And I came and, you know, hung out and, we looked at our ticket numbers and we're like, oh my God, we were so close, we could have been there with him.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that would have been hilarious, like, because a full circle.
our band name obviously is from a spirit box, but the second layer to that is the reason that we know what a spirit box is because we love Ghost Adventures so much. And Zach's always using a spirit box. So that's it's like the second more campy layer to the name.
And explain for those who don't know, what a spirit box is and how he uses it on the show and how they use it.
It's just a device that scans through radio frequencies extremely fast. And the odds of picking up a full sentence or a direct response or something, you know, you would think would be pretty slim to none, but this device actually picks up intelligent responses. And to people who believe it, you know, it's said to be a device that communicates with the dead.
Yeah, so they'd be EVPs.
Yeah.
Okay, so on your debut EP, the songs are haunted by an actual EVP recordings, right?
Yeah.
So what is the story behind accessing those and your intent behind that? Like, why?
Well, coming out of our last band, it was kind of one of those situations where it was all of a sudden like, okay, we're no longer a band, right? And we were still on tour when the decision was made, and we were finishing up the tour. And so the remaining members, the ones that were along for the ride, we were like, well, we should start a new band. You know, we started discussing ideas and everything. And, you know, basically the general consensus was like, you know, we love the name Spirit Box. Absolutely obsessed with the paranormal stuff. Why not do almost not like a concept record, but why don't we, for at least the first stuff, we can do one long song for some of the stuff, and we can have like a really consistent, almost like white noise. That was the original thing, was that it was going to be like a white noise type thing throughout, like an atmospheric thing to kind of blend in with the layered guitars and everything and like the ambient stuff. And then that kind of evolved into like, well, I mean, we're naming our band Spirit Box and we love this stuff. Why not kind of give it a whole nother element where we're combining actual captured EVP recordings throughout, and that can almost be a theme where, like, if something really pretty is happening, that can be in the background almost like you don't even notice it, or when something extremely heavy and ugly is happening, that way it's the contrast between, like, you don't know who you're talking to. It could be something very friendly or something very, very very negative. So that was the whole concept behind that. It was just kind of bringing those elements together because the music is so, it's so contrasted with like really pretty singing and then really disgustingly heavy.
We didn't have access to be able to, you know, on our island, like afford a real spirit box.
Right.
So Michael went and he got a bunch of old radios from Value Village.
Yeah.
Like that were, some of them didn't work, some of them did. And he just, how long do you think he spent just like scanning the radio and talking and having stuff jump out at you? I wasn't there. I was like, I can't deal with it.
Well, a lot of that, well, a lot of that, you know, it's funny. Some of the EVP stuff was even taking certain sessions that I found like on YouTube that were really, really interesting, and then taking them in and pitching them, cutting them, stretching them, and just making them kind of different. And then going and getting, like you're saying, like getting the radios and just scrambling them extremely fast. And it was interesting doing that too, where, you know, some of the commercials and everything would, a word like fire would come out. Or like, I remember there's, if you listen really closely in the beginning of the third song on the album, a lady says, light a fire in a really creepy way. But that was just part of a commercial that was like scanning. So we're like, well, that's perfect. We'll just leave that in, you know? So yeah, it was a lot of that. It was a lot of different.
When you like, when you stretch stuff and pitch stuff down, like all of a sudden, just the, we thought were, you know, just Michael turning the knob, there was all this there's all this stuff in there that you don't notice until you isolate it. And it's really creepy. I don't like it. I don't like even just hearing it. Like there's some weird laughs and stuff. And Michael spent a lot of, I guess, since he was looking at it from just an actual like production point of view, he was sitting there just really concentrating on getting cool, like clear takes. But I heard it after he was done splicing everything up. And I was just like, I hate this. It's so scary. It's really scary. Yeah.
Was there a message particularly sinister that you uncovered and that's on one of the tracks?
There's definitely a lot of themes. There's definitely a lot of like the same person. And it kind of, even if you were to isolate parts of the first track, because they're all different. If you isolate part of the first track and then you get to maybe like, I don't know, at the end of the record, where it's fading out with some of the static too, you'll hear the same guy. But
people don't even know that we have the spirit box going through.
No,
all the songs
they don't even
Eddie
notice. They don't even notice because it's just kind of there.
Yeah.
If you were to remove it though, it'd sound so empty, right?
We even have it playing. We have the spirit box session playing like almost the whole time that we're playing live too.
Yeah.
And people don't notice, but it's going out of the speakers the entire time as our set's happening in between while we're tuning our guitars and stuff. There's really weird, completely strange, random stuff, whether it's like a commercial, like we're like selling cars, but they're like only certain parts get picked out, and it's everything you're like so heightened. It's your senses are so heightened to everything being creepy when really it probably is literally just a car salesman.
You know, well, like I was about to say, it's just at that point when we were putting everything together, I had so many. And so many of them were cut, so many of them were like stretched and everything that at that point it was more so I was looking at it like, oh, this is going to be an effect as opposed to like I'm trying to make a distinct, clear message. There are like more so in song three and in the second song as well, there are some stuff that you, if you listen really closely, you can pick up like some messages like the light of fire or help. There's a little girl that says help. But you know, it's just weird, very weird how you can get that from prying certain things or like going scanning through the radio and, you know, and disturbing messages kind of coming through.
Another disturbing thing with a spirit box is when it's not, when nothing's coming through, it just makes this really repetitive static noise.
Yeah.
It just goes.
Yeah.
And so we have, so that's almost like we have that in a lot of songs too. As in like the spirit box isn't communicating like what happened, why did a new presence is coming. So sometimes it's like kind of our little transitional thing. We have that.
Yeah. Almost like a build or something.
Yeah.
Like just tension.
Are these recordings done at your house or?
Yeah. Well, and some of the recordings as well, funny enough, were done through a spirit box app.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you can download an app on your phone.
You just turn the sound.
I don't want it on my phone.
Fun for the whole family.
Very scary. like
you turn the sound bank off. So there's nothing saved. Right. And then you can scan the frequencies fast or slow, AM or FM. And it just goes. And the whole time it's just like, ka, 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 and just random things come in. It's like, hello. And just like random stuff like
that. We deleted it off our phones. We're like, I don't want this.
Yeah, exactly. It was really anytime scary. We go to record, I have to re-download it. Just like, well, we need something. Okay. So.
Has anyone ever reported like anything weird happening from listening to that the EP or anything?
You know what? No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
Unless you've gotten some messages.
But. I don't know. I think people just get really stoned and put headphones on and freak out.
Sure.
Stuff that you don't normally hear in nice headphones. But I don't think so yet.
Something weird happened the first time I watched the Belcara video.
Oh.
It shut all the power off in this room 2 times.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
That video.
On two different occasions.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That video's creepy.
It's incredibly creepy and amazing, by the way.
I love that house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The house is on our island.
What's the story with that?
That story is pretty wild. So we got everybody together and for, I don't know, probably we probably set it up 2 weeks before we like finalized the location because funny enough, where we live, there's nothing really, there's no warehouses. There's no,
it's not like LA.
It's not like LA where I can just go to somewhere and be like, hey, can I shoot a music video in here on Saturday? Here's like $200 or something. Like it's not like that. Even though we have so many amazing buildings and everything, it's just like, it's almost like they're like heritage buildings.
Sure.
So
yeah. Access isn't easy.
You can't get it.
And when you're adding like a full band and like a drummer banging on drums for 8 hours into the mix, you know how it is. It makes things a little.
So the original plan was just to have this performance video and, you know, just make it look really sharp. And, you know, we can show off that we have a new drummer, blah, blah, blah. And we show up to this location. And for about a week and a half before, I'm emailing back and forth with this person. And I'm saying like, it's okay that, we're going to be playing music, right? Like, there's going to be drums. We're shooting a music video. I'm like, yeah, no problem.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We go and check out the spot. The lady, the representative there, she's walking us around. And it's a great little, it's a really awkward, really just weird white room, basically. It's perfect, right? And I'm like, oh, we're going to have drums. It's going to be cymbals. We'll be really quick, but like, we really need it. Oh, yeah, we do it all the time. No problem. So the day comes, we get everybody together. And like, the other members of our band don't live in the same city as us. So it's like, people are flying in, you know, there's, it's a lot of organization to get it going. We get up there, we set up, and we hit play. We get maybe a take and a half in, and all of a sudden you just hear bang, 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 and just aggressively. And so I run down the stairs.
And this is on video, by the way.
It's all on video.
No way.
Yeah. Run downstairs, and I open up the door, and this lady's like screaming at me.
What the
just
hell?
Just losing her mind, being like, what the hell are you
like,
doing?
Rightfully so. She's yeah. like, what is going on?
Because we did it in Fantan Alley. It's this, it's a small little alley in Chinatown where we live. And, you know, of course, I should have known, but I was so like, we need anything at this point. You know what I mean? Because we need to get this done. And so she starts freaking out. And I'm just being like, look, like, I totally get you're mad. I totally get like, this is affecting you. Like, please just give us 25 minutes. We're just going to run through it two or three more times and we'll be out of your hair. And she is just like, okay, fine. Just make it quick, you know, run upstairs, hit play, go again. And then my phone starts going zzz, zzz, and I pick it up. And the guy who rented me the place was like, you got to stop. Like, cops have been called three times.
Oh my God.
And then who shows up?
And so I put the phone down. I'm like, okay. And then, you know, I basically was like, we're going to go one more time. And I put the phone down and hit play. We start going. And then there's like this mystery side door that we didn't even notice. And that like right
a
next to us,
door.
It's like a locked door. And we just hear bang, bang, bang. So we stop and we open up the door and these two police officers come in and they're standing there and they're like, what's going on? And we're like, well,
we're just trying to make a music. We're
half the band's underneath sheets covered in blood.
Well, see, that's the thing. At that point, we realized, we were like, okay, clearly we got three takes of the live stuff. Now we need to get creative. What can we do to be quiet?
We
to
also
like
could
fill
use
it out?
The speakers. We had to play it off my phone.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people in the video, we only shot, how many takes did we do? One real take with the full band, and then everything else is fake.
Everything's fake.
We're pretending to drum.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and like it's the close-ups are like unplugged. And then, so we were standing there and we're like, well, what could we do, you know, to kind of make this a little more interesting? And, you know, I can't remember who it was, but it was like, okay, you lay down there. We're going to put sheets over you. And then Courtney's just going to go wild.
I wanted to look like a cult leader.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Get everyone to like to take the drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. So we hit play on our phone and we just recorded Courtney dancing a bunch while we were dead on the ground.
And and it worked out cool because it looks so awkward because the performance where you can actually see the whole band playing. And I'm like, I'm not really lip syncing properly. And everyone kind of looks really stiff. It's because that was just our run through.
Yeah.
And we couldn't hear. So the whole time we're like, oh, I can't hear. We need to have the speakers louder. We were just running through getting levels. And that ended up having to be the music video.
The final.
Wow.
So
it makes it unsettling, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
When you're kind of dancing in halftime.
Yeah,
and
it's weird. It doesn't make any sense. And so.
So at that point, we were still editing all of our own videos and everything. And we were sitting there and we're like, well, we need some more shots. And we were talking about it. And we remembered that there's this almost like an abandoned village about 45 minutes away from where we live. And it's a tsunami zone, basically. And all the houses are just left because, you know, some company bought them up and eventually they'll probably do something with it. But there's probably about six or seven houses that are just, you know, broken windows and everything.
It's below sea level.
There's
so they have
that
to leave.
Blue one in particular that's sitting right in front of the water. And people go through it all the time. And we're like, let's just take a camera and we'll just do some creepy stuff. And, you know, we'll throw
we're
that
starting
in.
To run out of free music videos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I have a couple more left in me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All our videos are just random spots that are free for us to hang out in. Every video we've done is nothing's been like a big professional thing or like, oh, here's a barn. Oh, here's our backyard. But we'll just do them there.
It looks so good. That's seriously one of the coolest videos, honestly.
That means
that's
a lot.
Awesome. That means
Michael,
a lot.
Michael doesn't, we don't edit videos and do all that stuff because we're super passionate about doing that ourselves. It's just out of necessity. We'd much rather pay someone that inspires us to
knows what they're doing
to create a concept for us and work with us. But, you know, out of necessity, And we all, luckily, we have a guy that's directed a couple of our videos. His name's Dylan, and he has his own production company called Versa Films. And he's, out of the kindness of his heart, really helped us out and tried to cut costs like as much as possible. To because he just really, you know, wanted to make a cool, he heard the songs. I was like, I feel like I could make a cool video. So he directed one video. It's called Perennial.
Yeah, beautiful video.
Great one.
And then he directed another video, the last one, he had called Bleach Bath.
Oh.
But the problem is, you know, he still is working on his literally a $0 budget. So he's like, all right, you guys have to find me for free
locations
to shoot, you know. Yeah.
Oh my god.
So we've all had to become really creative and like push ourselves to figure something out on our island. So from now on though, we're going big time.
Yeah.
That Bleach Bath video looks like it was shot in a kill room.
It's just a barn.
It looks like a slaughterhouse.
It does.
Yeah. So the day before, we had to go in and we had to get all the hay out of the hay barn.
The farmer was like, "You can use it, but you got to clear out all this hay." So the day before, we were just sitting there, and you know, poor Courtney's got asthma, and all this dust is coming up.
Oh my god!
Like, yeah. So Dylan will be very pleased next time we do a video with him. We'll be like, "All right, we can probably go wherever you'd like."
Yeah.
Do
here
it.
We go.
Just go out. This dude in our backyard let us use his barn for 8 hours.
Who are the characters you're playing in that video? The redhead and the blonde.
You know, they were just me looking on Amazon.ca and being like, which wigs can I afford? Canada. And then I'm so fortunate because our bass player Bill, his wife Ashley happens to be an amazing makeup artist. And I always kind of joke with her that she's like the creative director of the band as far as how we look, because she helped me come up with, we tried to really brainstorm what is like a almost free outfit idea that someone who isn't talented in that respect can make. She's like, Saran wrap. We found a couple cool visuals of some models wearing like very interesting handmade cellophane dresses, like really cool editorial stuff. So she was like, all right, go to Michael's and get some cellophane, and then to that night I'm just gonna wrap all the cellophane around you and it's a dress. So she and I just wanted to have me look beautiful but like very disturbing. So we just worked with, okay, what does Courtney have in her closet, what wigs can Courtney get, and how, and she had, you know, a really short amount of time to do all these makeup looks on me. So we did that all in the one day. I'd shoot all my scenes exactly the same. And then Michael's dad would come pick us up from the barn and drive us back to his parents' house. And she'd take off my makeup and I'd do my, I learned how to do wigs and stuff and glue them on my head. And then poor Barry would take us back to the slaughterhouse looking place. Right, yeah. And then we'd call him again. All right, Barry, we're finishing up in 5 minutes. You got to get us again. Cause it's not like we have like a, you know, it's not a set. There's no bathroom and like anything for us to, there's nowhere for me to change and like set up my stuff. I'd have to buy like a craft service table to do that. You know,
that's fascinating to know the behind the scenes, because it just looks so slick and amazing, you know.
Lucky we have this band. We're so fortunate in this band. We've somehow conned a bunch of really talented people into just donating their services
their time to
us. More importantly than the services, the time and thoughtfulness behind the, kind of like you guys right now. See, we found you. You're donating your time to us.
Yeah. I want to talk a bit about the music, starting with the instrumentation. There's a lot going on. When you are working on the music, there's a lot of like musical moments that are kind of almost spliced inside of it. Some of it sounds like intentional accidents. It's like very controlled chaos. It's super deliberate. What is the process of creating that?
It all just starts off with a riff and me sitting in front of a laptop, and I'll just record anything that just sounds good to my ear. And then from there, it's just building the riff with drums behind it. So I'll program drums and then just track some bass. And, you know, over the years, it's kind of gotten to the point where, instead of being overly critical of each little thing, you know, in one session, I'll just try to get as much of a song done as possible. So whether that's an intro, a verse, and then maybe a chorus, if I'm lucky, you know, as long as it's all recorded, I know I have it. And then from there, it's just kind of plugging away at it until, you know, something clicks and it all connects. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's all just a lot of me hunched over in front of a laptop and just hoping everything kind of works. And
right,
you always
right.
tell Michael he has to go to the basement.
Yeah,
go to Michael, go to the basement, make us some songs.
Or you turn on a spirit box and ask
yeah.
questions.
Spirit yeah,
box.
There you go.
What spirit box. The song be in?
Does the song gent?
Yeah. yeah. gent, you know?
Please respond.
Please respond. Love Michael.
But a really cool thing about these two new songs is that, you know, I usually have a problem with worrying about if something is not complex enough. You know what I mean? Where like I'm not, like I was just saying, like over the years I have gotten better, but I sometimes when something is too simple, I'm just like, nah, we can't do
like
it.
You get you
know
lost.
What I mean? I kind of get, I lose the whole vision of it all. You know what I mean? So this time around with Dan, our producer, Dan Bronstein, he came up to Canada. What was it? End of June?
A month ago.
Yeah. A month ago. End of July. Sorry. And, yeah, like I had all these riffs and everything and we just sat there for, I don't know, 4 days, 5 days. And we wrote about 5 songs together. And with him just kind of making me have those aha moments where like, you know, maybe it would have taken me another 6 months to figure that out as to where to go with it. With him, he's like, no, you already have it. We just need to move this here and cut this. You know what I mean? So it was great to be able to sit there and actually have someone else.
Like a teammate.
Yeah. And like really guide the ship with me, you know? So
we've never gone to do that before.
No.
It seems like such a complex thing to do because you have Courtney who's singing some beautiful melodic, you know, parts of the song and you're like, wow. And then next second she's screaming her ass off. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, how do you balance? I mean, how do you, is it, do y'all always have to go into that mindset of thinking she's going to do this here and this here when you're writing any of the guitar parts?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, everything up until these two songs, I would never hear what Courtney would have in mind for the parts until we'd go to record it.
I don't tell it. If I show them, it means that it's permanent.
Yeah.
So it's like, until I go to record, I don't like to tell anyone my lyrics or anything.
Wow.
I don't even write them down properly.
No, that's true.
Until the day of.
Yeah. 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 She was showing me her booklet yesterday for one of these songs. And she was like, see this 80-page booklet? It's just one song. Going like this.
Wow.
Lines like manically scribbled everywhere. Shit. You know what I mean? I
guess there's magic in that surprise though. It's probably magic in withholding that, right?
Yeah. It's like, it makes me not have to commit. It's like, I think it's like a safety blanket thing.
Yeah.
It's like I don't have to commit to this thing until in the day of, I write all the lyrics actually out all on one page. And then in my brain, I'm like, all right, now you have to do this.
Yeah.
It's here.
And with before too, I would always have to be there and recording Courtney for the songs. Everything else would be in a different engineer recording my parts. So sitting there and hearing everything for the first time for the official final thing, it's tough because we would always kind of go back and forth and Courtney being my significant other too, that has another dynamic where like, maybe she'll take me saying something like, oh, that wasn't maybe as good or blah, blah, blah. Like she might take that as an insult or whatever. And now with Dan in the mix and him actually recording Courtney, it's kind of nice. I get to kind of just play the middleman as opposed to like telling her what to do and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and then, this is Dan's passion and his job is producing. So, you know, where people tell us, oh, I think it's so cool that you guys do everything DIY. And I'm like, we don't want to.
We really don't want to.
We're poor. We don't do this because we want to do it. We want to work with the best people and learn. We've learned so much just getting to work with Dan a little bit. And he laughs so hard because this is just his every day. He's like, this is just how it is. You work with songwriters and everyone, and you bounce ideas off each other and it gets the creativity flowing and it gives you guys the confidence because I'm like propping you up. And we've never done that. It's always just us, very remote by ourselves. We never work with anyone else. Mm-hmm. We don't even have another guitar player in our band. And Michael does all he does all the bass, he does all the drums, and he does all the guitar.
But see, this is where I think that all this hustle, this is the secret sauce. Mm-hmm. This is what makes your sound.
Yeah.
You could, you know, hand it off somebody else, some producer, and they'll, you know, wash it, change it up, and you'll be like, well, that's not what we do.
Exactly.
You
know? Right.
So the perfect thing about this is that Dan, this is his first time producing us and actually physically recording us, but he's the one that has mixed and mastered all of our music.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been working with us on this project since the beginning. So he like knows what I would do and he knows what Michael would do. And he's probably heard our songs more than we've heard our songs.
He gets the mission statement for sure.
Yeah. So it's cool. He's like our surrogate band member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And he's still letting us go buck wild in there. He's like, wow, you guys are very interesting to work with. We mainly worked with like pop people, like like SoundCloud rapper guys.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So he's like, this is quite an experience for him too. He's having fun.
Yeah.
That polarity of darkness and light that you guys do so well makes for a really cinematic listen.
Yeah.
One example I can think of would be at the end of the Mara Effect Part 2, a wonderful example of the evil side of what you do in terms of dissonance. And even though you said your songs really can be broken down into riffs, the presentation is a lot more liquid than that and seems to have more in common with like a film score or like classical music when it's done. I was wondering if there was any influence from film scores, from horror movies or anything like that, that you're maybe even subconsciously applying to the attack.
Big
time. I
think
you love the tension of
tension for sure. I mean, a prime example of that, not really a horror movie, but like Inception.
Mm.
Inception is one of the best examples of that. I feel like
Interstellar is a great soundtrack
and
too.
Also Interstellar for sure. But you know, it's a prime example of if you were to take that out, would that movie have the same impact? Probably not. It's its own thing. You hear certain sounds from that soundtrack and you know exactly what it's from. You know what I mean? So that mentality definitely kind of carries over to what we do because we want to incorporate, you know, whether it's sounds or whether it's moments where not a lot of other bands are thinking about putting white noise or static or just something that if you were to take it out, you know, it would just make everything kind of, you know, fall apart, really.
I look at it like you're kind of, and I try to do the same thing with my vocals, but I feel like you lay the groundwork a lot more with the instrumental. To me, when I listen to the stuff that you're making, it's like you're creating a little world, like the song's a little universe. You know?
Sure.
Same like how in a movie, you know, you have to create the world in the movie.
Everything has to have its place, right? Like it's got to sit perfectly. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of riffs, right? Like, or just a bunch of small parts pieced together and you're just grasping at straws, hoping that it can kind of work. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So I listen to the stuff that you do the same way, you know, some composers that I think are really cool, like when they're making stuff for movies, it just sounds really thoughtful. It's really, really thoughtful. And I feel like his stuff's really thoughtful too.
Oh, thank you.
Every little piece that he puts in there is like very intentional and like, humble in some ways, but it's really cool, but it's not really about his musicality. It's not someone that doesn't really care about someone's technical skills on the guitar still really appreciates it. And I think people that do appreciate technical stuff, even though it's not super flashy, I think they can really see like the thoughtfulness in it, you know?
I wanted to talk about the lyrics real quick too. There's an ethereal dark poetry there when you really look into it. The videos have the lyrics posted for a lot of the stuff.
Right.
Mara Effect 3. Mm-hmm. I'm a language that you've hidden a syllable and now you're refusing to speak. Beautiful stuff. It's something that is also really connecting with people, and the listeners on the comments board are really gravitating to what you're writing about. I was wondering if you can comment on your lyrical approach to this stuff.
Well, I usually start out with like a theme, like a idea in my head, like kind of if I think maybe, I don't know anything about this stuff, but maybe the way someone who is a director, a screenplay writer might decide, I want to make like a short film or something like that. I usually have a little idea in my head, but it usually snowballs and the song generally is about something, like some theme. Always like, it always goes back, no matter what I do, it always goes back to being about myself. Like, so I start out writing the song about, like, for instance, the Mara Effect song. All those songs are, it's like a little story I thought of a sleep paralysis. So it's like the first part is someone who's just kind of discontent in their life. It's the second part, now they're going to bed, they go to sleep, they're dreaming. And then, you know, when you're having a nice dream, but like you're about to go into nightmare zone and you can almost like feel that you're like something's coming, like under the happy part of your dream, there's something stressful that's bubbling up. And then the third part is like you're in your nightmare and then you're going into sleep paralysis and it's very scary and you don't really, you know, is it real? Are you really getting consumed by like a demon, some dark force, or is it just truly sleep paralysis and why do we get it? And that's how that's like an example of a theme in one of our songs. But, you know, it always ends up somehow going back to me being really discontent with my life and how I deal with depression. Like it always goes back to my insecurities and my depression. And I think that's just a way for me to work it out, because I don't go to therapy. I don't really talk to anybody else other than Michael about it. And I feel really uncomfortable. I'm not one of those musicians that likes to open myself up in that way. I'm more of like my coping mechanism is more like self-deprecating and stuff like that. But then it doesn't matter. I can even trick myself to think I'm not writing about that. And then like a couple months later, I'll be like, oh my God, this song's about me. Everything's about me. I'm the singer. Everything's about me. I don't even know what I'm writing most of the time. I envy people that are really able, and a lot of poets and even a lot of authors. It's just every word they write is so intentional, and they can really explain to you why they chose those words. Every month, whatever our songs are about changes for me. Right now, they're about me being sad.
Well, I think you write those lyrics, but then also your fans who listen to the music and read those lyrics, they can resonate with that. They understand it because they're probably going through the same thing themselves, and so they appreciate that. And they're
most
like, wow, I'm not alone.
Stuff is universal.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Right. So, so right now, if you ask me in 6 months, I might give you a different answer. But that's how it's going for me.
So as far as playing live, I believe the band is only played live like a few times mm-hmm. in March. Mm-hmm. Yep. So what are your plans moving forward for live shows? And
We have some stuff in the works, which is really exciting. This whole time has just been like a build online, because especially being where we're from, we can't really easily just go out and start grinding and start. And at the same time, too, in the day and age that we are with social media and everything, it just made a lot more sense to kind of put the money and everything into the songs and the visuals and really connecting with people that way. So that, you know, when we do go out, it will kind of make it a little easier with people maybe already knowing us or maybe a friend talking about us or something, but looking like it's going to be the year, which we're really excited
about. Any
day
now, we're really hoping to get officially a tour offer to just be an opening band on like a European tour for some bands.
Yeah.
This is brand new information that we just found out a couple of days ago, and it's really like energized us to think that some people like care enough to like trust us and believe in us to let us be one of those, you know, small amount of bands that gets to go on that stuff, because that's how you finally get those opportunities. Just one person has to believe in you, and then it's like a snowball effect. If you do good, if you do well, and if you really put a lot into your performance and you execute it well, it snowballs up.
So, are there any bands you're looking forward to touring with or hoping to tour with?
Oh, everyone. Wow. Yeah. Everyone, basically.
We're so removed from this world. Just getting to go to a show. We went to our friend's show at the Tarragon. What is it? I always call it the Tarragon Ballroom. Is it?
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah.
We went to our friend's show a couple days ago there, and just getting to be like backstage with them getting ready and watching all the production. It's just such a novelty to us, and we just miss being around anyone that's like that understands what we're trying to do. And I just felt so, when we were leaving, I was like, I just feel so understood by everybody here.
Yeah.
And at home, if you're not in the entertainment world or any worlds like that, it's just really hard to identify with all of creative people like yourselves. I was like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because everyone has to have day jobs and all that kind of stuff. And it's a totally different world.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not negative about it, but you just feel kind of misunderstood.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it'd be like, why, if you didn't get to surround yourself with people who are so delighted by seeing like all your props in here, like if they didn't understand and appreciate how cool that stuff is, you know, you're kind of like, man. And then you finally meet a friend that's like, I love that stuff too.
Like, yeah.
Oh, it's not that you didn't see value in what you were doing, but you just, not being understood by other people really wears you down.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you feed off the energy of people who are like-minded, right?
Yeah.
And you get it.
So I think I don't care who we tour with. I just would love to be around professional musicians, like people that do that as their job and got to that level that I strive to be at. I'd love that.
We used to be a part of that world, you know, like we would be gone a lot of the year, and that's just what we did. And then once we were cut off from that for a little while, it's been about 4 years.
We miss it so
much. It just feels like an eternity, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So. It's so fun because we finally got, we're finally like, wow, we figured out what we want to do. And our hope was that we would figure out something else we were passionate about that was more sustainable within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But it never happened.
Yeah.
I only we're stuck like on singing this. and writing songs and performing.
It's meant to be. Because what you guys are doing, we've been talking about it. There's so much passion and intent, and everybody who's responding to it is responding with equal passion. Like they're responding with that passion you put in right back to you.
Yeah.
It's going to be incredible. It already is. Once you guys are out on the road and stuff, it's just going to explode.
Most bands are just one song or one music video kind of snowballs, and we haven't had that one yet, but we've done a really good job with how long our songs are. It's hard for people to focus on like a 6-minute song and music video.
Yeah.
But we challenged ourselves this time. We're going to make 2 songs. And they're going to be under 4 minutes long. And it was really challenging.
It was really challenging.
Our producers right now, like in the studio, like trying to shave off a couple seconds.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Of certain beats and stuff. Yeah. It's just not something we have a lot of experience with. But so this was really, these songs probably are the most simple sounding songs that we've done. As far as just having like the structure, there's some more reoccurring parts in it. But man, this was so challenging. It made me want to work even harder to be more intentional about that stuff, about songwriting.
So what are your guys's top 3 horror films that you like to watch?
What would be one of your favorite ones?
One of my favorites is Hereditary.
Yeah.
Even though it's more of a recent one, that's one that's really stuck with me for sure.
Oh yeah, that bummed me out.
Yeah. Big time. Big time bummed me out.
I like the ones that if you took out any of the scary stuff, the story still really stood on its own.
Like the Conjuring movies.
Yeah, I like the Conjuring movies.
Especially the first one too. Yeah. That one really...
It's a compelling story.
It's a great story.
And that's why I like...
It's a great love story too.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
That's why I like the Exorcist. If you turn that into a drama instead of like a thriller, the script is great. And you know, that's why I love like Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, beautiful movie.
It's great
movie.
It's so kooky.
Yeah,
and if you took out all the horrifying, creepy parts, it's still an interesting story about this girl that's like isolated and just, you know, like in a prison in her own home just because of her not having any worldly experience and being with this older dude who thinks he knows everything. But even if you took out the Son of the Devil and all that stuff, like it's a compelling thing. So those are the ones that I latch onto the most.
Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Poltergeist.
Even just what's surrounding it after the fact as well. Just insane.
Like all the death stuff.
All the death.
Yeah, it's a haunted movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Very spooky.
And as you were saying, like with the which was the one with Ed and Lorraine Warren, the Conjuring?
Conjuring, yeah.
Anything to do with Ed and Lorraine Warren, for sure. Those two really, really interest me because a lot of people think that they're faking it or, you know, it's a hoax or anything, but I've seen some of the footage from some of the cases that they have where, you know, they're in this apartment or their house and like chairs are being pulled and everything. And they're just an interesting couple.
Yeah, it's
like,
pretty creepy.
What would be top 3? Because I need one more. What would be one more? I don't know. I love Hereditary.
You don't have to.
It has to be 3.
Exactly. You cannot leave until you get there. No,
and I think the Ring, I rewatched it again and it's aged out a little bit, but you know, every movie does age
right.
Exactly it is. But I think I like the darkness of that movie. I like the vibes of that movie. And that movie really disturbed me as a kid. So I think that one I kind of like, it's like been like imprinted.
you guys are big into true crime, right? And serial killers and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to circle back a little bit here and mention The Exorcist because you brought it up, Courtney, a couple times here. Mm-hmm. And specifically, you mentioned the scene with the CT scan.
Yeah.
Do you know why that's probably one of the scariest scenes in the movie?
I can't remember. I'm not retaining information. Wasn't like the guy that was the doctor in it. He like killed someone after he was in the movie.
He was a serial killer at the same time they were shooting that movie.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Or it was a guy who was an orderly or something.
Yep.
It was something, or he's a nurse.
Yep.
And he was a serial killer.
Yeah. He was killing, I believe, gay men in New York City.
Yeah.
Right when they were filming that movie.
It's so chilling. I want to watch it again. And actually I don't. I feel like just seeing that guy and just knowing that he was just living his normal I'm in a movie extra life on production sets, then going off
and doing
and
that.
Doing that. Yep. Ugh. That's so gross.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Oh, what a, I don't think last time I watched it, I knew that. So I know.
That's funny. You're the first person who actually like can reference that.
I don't,
nobody
knows
that story. You know,
I love podcasts and I love true crime. And I don't know why. I think it's because, I think a lot of women in particular love true crime podcasts. It's kind of like a therapeutic way to work out some feelings that we all have, our secret feelings of these really scary things happening to us. Maybe that's why I don't feel like I'm morbidly fascinated. Like I feel like compelled to listen to it. Like I'm not like stoked about all the gory details. I just feel like I have to hear it and like almost learn from it.
Do you guys have a favorite true crime story?
Story.
Killer, you know, or
that's a good question. Actually,
I just listened to like a 4-part podcast on like John Wayne Gacy that was horrible. There's also the guy from Vancouver that you would know, Robert Picton.
The farm.
He had a farm, and really anywhere the people and the Golden State Killer, the serial killers. And at the same time, it's like a love hate thing. I hate that I'm like giving them the time of day. But I'm fascinated in like the psychology part of it, of like, and how superior serial killers feel. They have this sense of like gravitas where I am the smartest person in the world. No one will catch me. And I just love hearing about like their ego and then like their demise of when they became careless.
I was so interested because the Golden State Killer, wasn't he recently caught because of the book that Patton Oswalt's wife wrote?
Yeah, and it sucks that she didn't get to see the end of it, but she did research on that for like 10 years or something.
Yeah.
And then her book came out posthumously, but then after that they caught him with all those DNA websites.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so fascinating. And for me, like recently I've been really interested in the deep web. And a lot of what these serial killer stories, like the reason why they fascinate me is because a lot of the time you're just sitting there being like, how do they not think they're going to get caught? You know what I mean? I was listening to like a 3-part documentary on Silk Road, the deep website where you could buy drugs or you can buy firearms and stuff. And it was going in depth about the guy who started that and how he's in jail now, but how he started putting hits out on people through Silk Road and
that
through
you could
the
hire
deep web.
You could hire him and you can like buy people.
You can do anything on that site.
Anything
basically.
Horrible that you could think of,
you can do it. And yeah, that was extremely fascinating to me because the whole aspect of, you know, like finally getting caught and everything. Well, it's so scary because in the deep web, like you straight up could avoid, if you're that careful,
right.
You can avoid all
like
of that.
Cryptocurrency to pay for the stuff and all that anonymity.
Yeah.
See, that's fascinating to me because at a certain point, there is no anonymity. Somebody has to reveal where they live or where they are to get the drugs delivered, the guns delivered. So how does that unfold, you know?
Well, it's insane because we can only really access 2% of the internet. Everything outside of that is stuff that's, you know, military or whatnot. But that's why the deep web is so terrifying, because people are using these certain browsers that hide where you are with VPNs, and then I would never visit it or anything like that. I just find the whole concept fascinating. But you can get away with some pretty horrible stuff, I'm sure.
We also love cult leaders.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? That also, don't take that out of context. Right. Courtney Love, big fan of Jim Jones. Big fan.
Right.
But you know, like all that stuff. I'm really interested in their origin story. Because a lot of them, it's always typical. It's like that, you know, oh man, well, after hearing about how their mom was or their dad was, I see. And then some of them had like wonderful childhoods and they still became like horrible monster people. And it's always like that fine line of you being like a con man and then figuring out how to manipulate people and like, and get them to follow you and then even follow you into death.
Yeah.
And figuring out who's vulnerable. The psychology of all that stuff I find really interesting, especially like mirroring it back into just like religions that we just take for granted that we think are fine, and like to kind of like turn the lens back on how like organized religion, but then also just like how that kind of stuff veers off into crazy territory very quickly. So fascinated by that stuff. I find it kind of, maybe that's probably why we like Hereditary, is because of all like the weird
occult undertones with that.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've been reading about this recent, that's not a recent true crime, but I've been recently reading about this true crime case that actually happened around Burbank. And it was these two guys in the 70s, and they bought a 1977 like GMC van and outfitted it as a traveling torture machine.
Wow.
And they called it the Murder Mac.
Whoa, wow. I've not heard
and
of
there
that.
Was two guys who met in jail. One was like a convicted sex offender and the other was a bank robber. And in jail, they became friends and they made this plan that they wanted to kidnap and kill a girl from each age from 13 to 19. They want to have one of each age.
What?
And they audio taped it.
Oh,
and they,
my God.
So the audio tapes are considered one of the first real snuff
Yeah.
You know, I guess film,
I
but it's audio. Right. Yeah, really?
Yeah.
And it's, they played it back in court and people were leaving and vomiting and stuff like that. So, I mean, the tapes are out there, this horrible, and the transcripts of the torture, but they got caught from bragging to other people about what they're, because like, as you said, they have this, this thing in their head. This thank arrogance.
God, thank God those people have that arrogance. Otherwise, we would never catch them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some podcasts where they go into way too much detail where they'll like, oh, here's the audio. Blah, 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 blah. I just turn it off.
Yeah.
Right away.
I can't help it though. I can't turn it off.
You can't?
There was one I was listening to. Do you remember there's this old guy and it's like there's people breaking into his house all the time. And so he just was like, it's kind of like an opportunity to kill them. He sat there. He knew they were teenagers. He knew they were going to break in and steal stuff. So he sat there waiting for them with a gun so he could shoot them and then call the cops and say it was self-defense. But he forgot his security systems also recorded audio.
Whoa.
So you hear him like shoot them and walk over to them and be like, I'm going to kill you, you little piece of shit, you know? And I'm just like, Michael and I, we both work together in an office and no one talks all day. We just listen to podcasts. So I'm just like sitting there. Just like,
yeah.
And I'll just look at Michael. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And just like, and people go, hey, Courtney, can I get you anything? I'm like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everything's fine.
Working on my report.
Someone's yeah. getting murdered.
We have this system on there where it's almost like MSN or like a chat thing where you can just talk to other employees.
Skype.
It's like a Skype for business. And all the time we'll just be sitting there and like, what are you listening to? She's like, oh, just, you know, kidnap, like this guy kidnapped someone and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I'm listening to, you know,
this guy.
The Blue Crew.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a nice change. I listened to you guys on the plane and It was one where you guys had a wheel that you spin and then you have to watch the movie.
The Wheel of the Damned.
Yeah, and you were talking about the Japanese movie that was a cool, like more obscure one, maybe from the 80s.
Haosu.
Yeah,
I think it was.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's all these like cool like girls that fight and they had cool names.
Yeah.
Their names were all what they had that had to do with them. And I was like, I got to see that. I really
want to see. We'll have to get you guys in on a Wheel of the Damned. We could do a Skype over from here.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah. I'd be too scared. I'm scared. I can only watch scary movies with Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we got to wrap it up. We're just about in an hour and a half. So we're
told
in
you
a
I
sweet
ramble
spot.
On.
This is awesome, though. Well, guys, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And we can't wait for the future of Spirit Box. This is exciting. It's
whenever
so awesome.
We're done, I'll send it to you and you guys can
you have to
hear.
Check it out.
It's really different. Please. It's really different. But that's why I like this band. I don't give a shit. Like I'll do, if I want to make a country song, I'll make a country song. If I want to make a 10 minute long Meshuggah song, I'll make that. I don't care. We're going to do whatever we want. Yeah. So I hope you guys like it.
Yeah.
It's okay if you don't. The next one will probably be different.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was the Boot Crew Podcast, episode 94. Special thanks to our guests, Courtney LaPlante and Mike Stringer of the band Spirit Box. Follow them at Spirit Box Music on Instagram, at Spirit Box Band on Twitter.
Go to spiritboxband.com for some of the most comfy hoodies and shirts you've ever worn. I'm not kidding. They have incredible merch. Also, tour dates at time of release. Tickets are available for their European tour supporting After the Burial alongside Make Them Suffer and Polar. Go see them play a kickoff show in Victoria, BC, Canada on February 22nd. Get their new single, Rule of Nines, their self-titled EP, and the singles collection EP everywhere.
Music for this episode provided by Spirit Box. Production tracks from Power Man 5000. Till next time, it's the Boo Crew saying sweet screams.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Boo Crew Podcast.
Haunt the Boo Crew at TalesFromTheBooCrew.com. Tales from the Boo Crew on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at Tales from the Boo. The Boo Crew is Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio. The Boo Crew is produced by Lauren Shand, chopped and sliced by Trevor Shand. The Boo Crew is a TSP creation, part of the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
Bye.
A Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network, home of the Boo Crew. Horror-centric interviews, SCP archives, weekly full-cast storytelling, horror queers, genre commentary from an LGBTQ perspective, and creepy for disturbing and terrifying creepypastas. Listen free wherever you stream audio and at bloodydisgusting.com/podcasts.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.